Okay, things happen.
Life happens. So, somebody came over to me this week. I won't say who. One of the guys said to me, "You know, are you gonna make up for the missed sicha? Right? So what are we gonna do? We missed the sicha on Shmot." So, which was a very nice thing to say. So I was thinking maybe just give two sichot one after the other. You know, that would make me very popular, I'm sure. But instead, I wanted to maybe talk about the something that links, I think, the two parshiyot. Actually three parshiyot, because I'm touching down. Bo, I mentioned this to someone actually earlier this last week was that 2 weeks ago you were naming whatever doesn't matter that just about anything that you say that you have to say about Parshat Shmot you could say about Parshat Va'ero, you could say about Parshat Bo and vice versa, right? You can figure out some connection, right? It's okay, even B'Shalach can fit in, but here it's not just that. Okay, I have something to say, so you know it's like the I'll just talk about it, but it's. I want to focus on. Start with something from last week's parsha and move into this week's parsha. The, Yetziat Mitzrayim really starts in Perek Gimel of Sefer Shemot, as you all know. Moshe is on Har Chorev. He's on Har Sinai. He sees the Sne Bo'er Ba'esh. Right. He sees the burning bush, and the hasna enenu ukal, the bush is not consumed. And one of the whenever you have certain details, so they are ripe for drashot. And here you have a really great detail, the sne, the bush. Right. If you recall, you know, the your basic childhood midrashei shmot. So if you know, you're Prince of Egypt, okay? So how big is the bush? Anyone remember, is it, the bush is really big in the movies. No, it's not Galsa. Not the Parsha comics. I'm not talking about Pshuto Shel comics. I'm talking about the Midrashic comics of, you know, Disney and the like. So how big is the? You can't really get a worked up. I mean, from a maybe, you know, Galsa's figured out how to do it, but it's like, you know, it's hard to get worked up from a small bush. So basically, you know, it's a this large conflagration, a sort of a bonfire type of thing. And in fact, the Medrash, or one of the Midrashim, there are many Midrashim that talk about this. So the Medrash talks about how a guy came to Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha, if I recall correctly, and said to him, you know, why did God reveal himself in a sneh? Why in a bush? And Rabbi Yoshua's response to him was, and if it was a charuv, if it was in a carob tree, or if it was in a shikma, if it was in a sycamore, so you'd also ask why. In other words, and then the guy left, but he said there are different versions of this. Before the guy left, I'll take the version in Shmot Rabbah. He said, but I can't just give you the answer like that. And then he gave a deeper answer. I'm not going to talk about the deeper answer of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha at the moment, because I'm going to focus on somebody else's answer. But what was the problem with his first answer? There was no problem with his first answer. Because after all, where was Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai. And Har Sinai, it's even called Har Chorev. in the parsha. It's a very harsh environment, right? Chorev, charava, dry, harsh. Sinai comes from sne. What kind of vegetation are you going to find in the middle of the desert, on a barren mountain? What kind of vegetation are you going to find there? You're not going to find charuvim. You're not going to find shikbot. You're not going to find big trees. There isn't just enough moisture for them. The sneh, as Andrew pointed out correctly, is a small thorn bush which is endemic to the desert. So if God's going to pick something, he's going to pick something that's there. And that's the answer that Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha gave to this questioner. It's very simple. Why did God pick the staff? Because he had to work with what he had to work with. It's as simple as that. If he had been revealing himself to Moshe in this area, so then he would have picked one of the broshim, one of the cypress trees that are here on campus, right? Or one of the pine trees. But he wasn't talking to Moshe here. He was talking to Moshe in the desert. So why did he have to tell the guy, but I can't just let you go with that answer? What was wrong with that answer? So the answer to that question is that the guy understood something. And if he didn't understand it, we should understand it. The guy should understood that if you go through all of Tanakh, do you know how many times the word sneh appears in all of Tanakh? 5 times. Do you know how many of those times are found in our perek? 4. Ooh. So you say, okay. The other time is in Birchot Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of Sefer Dvarim, where he refers back to this sneh. Shochni sneh. The God who dwells in the sneh. It's the only place that the sneh appears in all of Tanakh. And as I mentioned before, it's not just the sneh, it's Sinai. The entire mountain is named for it. And you ask yourself, why did God choose Sinai? Why did he choose the place where there is only a sneh? Why choose the desert? And Rabbi Yossi Aglili, there's a Mechilta, and the Mechilta gives, I think, 5 answers. And one of the answers is Rabbi Yossi Aglili. He's probably, some of the other answers you might have even heard of. I'm not going to go through those answers today. Not learning, say, Parshat Shemot. So what was Rabbi Yossi Aglili's answer? Yossi Aglili said the following. Mipnei ma nigla kodesh baruch hu mishmei marom. Why did God come and reveal himself from up upon high? V'hayam daber im Moshe mehasneh. Why did he pick the sneh? Mipnei shehu tahor. It's pure. And why is it pure? She'ein umot ha'olam osin oto avodah zarah. Nobody's ever picked a sneh to worship. People, when they choose their, if you will, their deities, are interested in finding things that are impressive. So if they choose to speak of the spirit, so they'll talk about, even in Pocahontas, it's the willow tree, right? In other words, you have an impressive flora that's in front of you. Something that is awe-inspiring. Right? Go to a redwood forest. Look up at a Erez Halavanon. Look up at the cedar of Lebanon. Those are trees that inspire you. And as a result, that inspiration turns into Avodah Zarah. Nobody's ever been inspired by a sneh. What this is saying, Rabbi Yossi HaGalili is saying, is that when God reveals himself, he chooses a place where it's austere, where it's away from civilization, where it is, to use Rabbi Yossi HaGalili's terminology, it's tahor, it's pure. And the sneh expresses that. So it wasn't a question of, well, why didn't God just, well, of course God chose what was there. The question really should be, why is that where it was? And this is the idea. When God reveals himself, it has to be in a place, or it should be in a place, or it was in a place that is free of all other influences. But that's just, if you will, a beginning. I said this week's parsha. In this week's parsha, at the end of the parsha, so the last makah in this week's parsha, there's seven that are found in this week's parsha. What's the last one? What's number seven? Barad. Hail. And Paro asks Moshe to stop the hail. Right? And Moshe, and here's the dialogue. Vayishlach Paro vayikra l'Moshe l'Aaron vayomer aleihem chatati hapa. This time I really sinned. Hashem hatzadik, God is the righteous one, v'ani v'ami harishayim. Ha'atiru el Hashem, pray to God. Mivirav biot kolot Elohim uvarad ve'eshalacha etchem v'lo tosifun la'amot. Pray, let this barad, let this hail just stop. I will send you away. You won't have to be here anymore. Vayomer elav Moshe. So Moshe responds. Kitzeti et ha'ir. When I leave this town, efros et kapai et Hashem. I will lift up my hands in prayer, along the lines of, if you will, Birchat Kohanim. I'll lift up my hands in prayer. El Hashem, Hakalot Yechdalun. Everything will stop, etc. On that, those three words, Kitzeti et Ha'ir, when I leave the town. So Rashi comments, and he says the following. He says that Kitzeti et Ha'ir means that Moshe could not pray inside the town. Why couldn't he pray inside the town? Because there's Avodah Zarah in the town. And you can't pray where there's Avodah Zarah. And all of the Parshanim ask on Rashi. They say, one second, this isn't the first time that Moshe prayed. Moshe prayed after the frogs. Why couldn't he, if there's a problem of praying in the town because there's Avodah Zarah, so he shouldn't have been able to pray then either. What's the answer? So I'm reading a snippet from the Ramban. Ramban says, he doesn't ask it against Rashi, he's basically just explaining the psukim, but this answers it for Rashi. Kitzeti et ha'ir, al derech hapshat yitachen lomar, shaya Moshe mitpalel beveto. Where did Moshe pray, generally? In his home. Rak bepam hazot ratza liyot kapav prusot hashamayim. This time, he wanted to lift up his hands towards the heavens. V'yechdelu akalot v'amatar miyad, for the storm to stop in an instant. So that, to go out in the streets, you can't do that in the town because of the Avodah Zarah. Okay, so this is the difference. When he is in his own home, you're able to pray outside. You're able to pray, even if there's avodah zarah outside. To go out in the street, that's a problem if there's avodah zarah. By the way, and there will be an opportunity for this, right? This is a good jumping off point for a question of what is our, how do we deal with other religions in general? Okay, but not for now. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do with this difference, this distinction between being inside your home and not? So this is the same type of idea. This is really what I think comes back to that sneh. You know, why is it in the desert? It's in the desert because this is where Torah has to start. But it's not where Torah ends. You have to be able to impact on the world. You have to be able to have... The Beit HaMikdash isn't built in Midbar Yehuda. You know, it wouldn't have been so hard if that's really where Torah has to be, in the desert. You guys were in Almog. Right? Almog is really not that far from Yerushalayim. There are within, you know, closer to Almog than to Yerushalayim, but not far from either. There are various monasteries that have been established in the desert there. Lahavdil, Nevi'im talk about going into Midbar Yehuda. We could have the Essids, right? The cult that brought us the Dead Sea Scrolls, they lived in the desert. The idea to leave society, to be bimakom tahor, that's not our vision. Our vision is, it may start bimakom tahor, but it has to impact on the world as a whole. And the Mikdash is in Yerushalayim. The Mikdash is not in the Midbar. The Mikdash is on Har Hamoriah, not on Har Sinai. And that ultimately is where the Shekhinah dwells to this very day. But how do you manage that feat? How do you go from the desert to into the world? You can't just jump in. The world itself is full of avodah zarah. The world itself is full of all sorts of very nasty influences. When you're in or exposed to those influences, you can't pray. On another midrash, I won't read it now because of the time, Moshe also can't receive nevuah when he's there. Because nevuah is when God speaks to us. And of course, prayer is when we speak to God. And you can't have that kind of dialogue when you're surrounded by avodah zarah. Where can you have it? If you are in a place which is avodah zarah, I mean, our goal ultimately is to purge the world of those influences. And so we start here, and we start in Yerushalayim. But if you're surrounded, you go into your own home. And your home, if it's properly constructed from a spiritual vantage point, so they can protect you from what's without. Moshe could pray in his own home. But even Moshe can't pray when he's outside. He has to leave the city to be in a place without that kind of civilization in order to be able to have the dialogue with the Ribono Shel. I just want to ask the following question, okay? And I'm not going to answer it. I think each one of us has to answer it for ourselves. You know, you have all been raised in homes that have brought you to this place. And you all have already your own little homes, okay, with your roommate. You have your room. Hopefully you don't pray in your room too often. Okay? This isn't the Makom of Avodah Zarah. You don't have to be, you know, say, well, if Moshe prayed in his room, I could do the same thing. But you have to ask yourself, are each one of us building the kind of home that can really withstand what goes on outside? We're not going to go back to the step. You know, maybe every now and then we have some kind of, you know, call it a seminar, a cleansing moment. Bidud in Almog, where you go back to something like that. But that's just the beginning. That's not supposed to be where we end. But are the kinds of homes that we're building, the kinds of homes that you're building, what do you bring inside there? It's so easy today, so easy to bring the equivalent of the Avodah Zarah into our bedrooms. Before you even get out of bed in the morning, right? You check your little gilulim machine right here. And you can look at this, and this can be, of course, you know, I'm not going to go through all of the possibilities that can be held, even with just, you know, an iPhone 7. Right? What you can get, right? Right? They're what you can bring in, so the walls around you won't really hold very back much. When you're davening, how often are you looking at your phone? And not just because you don't have a sitter, so you're looking at the tefillah app. But because, you know what? You're not really leaving, and I'm not saying it's Avodah Zarah in the sense of I wouldn't have one if I felt that it was something that was tamei to begin with and you can't have it, period. There are those people who tell you that. That's not our philosophy. But that doesn't mean that you don't have a responsibility to make sure that it doesn't it remains tahor. That's a huge responsibility. It's much easier just to simply say this is a little piece of Avodah Zarah and throw it out, chuck it out. And send me back a couple of generations in my technology. But if you're not going to do that, so then you have to ask, have I built the walls of my home sufficiently strong to make sure that Avodah Zarah is on the outside and not on the inside? And even if that Avodah Zarah is nothing more than a distraction, do I leave the distractions when I am having my dialogue with God? Do I leave them on the outside, or do they bring them in as well? And basically, the tefillah becomes the distraction while I'm trying to check about whatever is going on and whatever is burning at that moment, because I've received 6 WhatsApps since I started Pesukei Dezimra. That's really the question. Torah begins b'makom tahor. Torah is carried on throughout Jewish generations for over 3,000 years since that moment, because Jews have been able to figure out how to keep the tamei outside and the tahor inside. It's our turn now. And our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, their kind of Judaism is going to be dependent on the decisions that we make right now. what kind of batim do we build? Do we build it with the Avodah Zarah on the outside? Or God forbid, do we let those influences in?